Welcome back, everyone, to an episode of The Money Seat, the show where I put myself on the hot seat. Financial professional here, and I have guests come on and ask me five questions related to money, investments, finance, anything really related to something a certified financial planner like myself would be able to help with. And I'm excited for today's guest, Kathleen. And why don't you give us a little introduction about yourself, Kathleen?
Okay, I'm Kathleen. I am from Chicago. I am a veterinarian. I've been practicing for close to 3 years now. And Ross is my financial advisor, and I have some questions for him.
Thank you. What school did you go to for your, I assume, undergrad and then your vet degree?
Yes, I went to Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin-Madison for undergrad, and then I went to University of Illinois for veterinary school.
Interesting. Is there any conflictions in terms of those are rival Big Ten schools, right? Is there any conflicting interests?
I root for whoever's doing better, unless it's football.
Okay, so fair weather.
Yes.
Okay, got you.
Well, I'll root for both for basketball.
Okay.
And that's really the only other sport, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, you can't really root for Illinois for football because it's so bad it doesn't exist. And I don't think they have, they don't have a hockey team or a soccer team or a bunch of stuff, which is weird. So, yeah, you're limited, but that's good to know. So, kind of like hopping on the bandwagons when they're good and enjoying the ride.
Yes, now I don't feel the same way about the White Sox and the Cubs.
I was going to say, same thing for the White Sox and the Cubs?
I'm not on board with the Cubs. I will never be on board with the Cubs.
Yeah, and is there a reason why?
Because I'm a White Sox fan.
Yeah.
And I'm an outsider.
And you grew up on the South Side, right?
Up on the South Side.
Yeah, that's very common. I find, for those listening who aren't familiar with Chicago, it's a very heated North-South Side debate for Sox and Cubs. Generally, if you do grow up in the South Side, it's not only very pro-Sox, but very anti-Cubs. A little less so now that the Sox are better. And the Cubs, right? But it's interesting. If you go to other parts of Chicago, there's a little less hatred of both sides. Sometimes it's like, I like my team and I'm lukewarm about the other. And you find some good civil wars in the families and everything. But yeah, that's good to know. I have one last question too. For those people out there, younger listeners who are thinking about being a veterinarian, how long was your schooling and when were you actually able to start the career path of that?
Yeah. So I went to 4 years of undergrad. I majored in wildlife ecology. So if I didn't go to vet school, I was going to go be a park ranger.
Okay.
And communications. And then after that 4 years, I went to veterinary school for 4 years.
4 years. Okay.
And I was able to start after that. You can go to do an internship after that if you want to.
Okay.
And then follow it up with a residency for specialty. But I just wanted to work with dogs and cats. And so just eight years total.
So theoretically, you did it as quickly as possible?
Yeah.
It sounds like.
I didn't take
okay. So 8 years, which would be undergrad and 4 years of vet, is as quick as it gets to being a fully licensed vet out there.
Yes.
Okay. And also, this might be a question of yours, but was vet school a considerable expense and is student loans?
Yeah, that's one of my questions, kind of touching base about it.
All right.
But yes, so it's expensive.
We'll go there. Okay.
Depending on where you go, if you're in state, it's a little bit cheaper. If you're out of state, it's probably going to be closer to like $50,000 or $60,000.
And so I assume that's why you chose Illinois for vet school.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the advice is for those people who are choosing a vet school, choose the in-state school you live in because it's going to save you a considerable amount of money.
Sure is.
Because you probably won't be 27 until you start making any. So, okay, good. So thank you very much for that. I don't want to deter anyone from being a veterinarian, but I know that there's not a lot of schools out there and it's a very competitive industry. But I also know that people are having pets more than they're having kids. So
we got very busy during COVID.
Yeah, right.
We got a puppy and a lot of people are at home watching their puppies.
Yep.
Really looking into every little thing their puppy is doing.
I don't anticipate that changing, so I gotta think the demand is gonna be there for people to do it. And so just I think that's good to know. So anyways, let's get into question number one for you.
Yeah.
If you got that ready.
Yeah, so I guess this was like my third question, but I'll start it off with since we about that. So how do you decide, or when you're recommending to people on like what to do, do you recommend paying your loans off or kind of putting them and paying the minimum and then investing instead of getting the loans like fully?
Yeah. So that's if you can, right. So the good thing with your job, and we'll just focus on being a veterinarian, because if you had, a good amount of student loan debts, but you're in a profession that doesn't pay as much, it's going to be a lot more difficult. Then the good thing with the vet or a doctor or any type of lawyer, those degrees, is usually when you finish school, you have a job that pays you a considerable amount of money, at least more than the national average, especially for your age. So that's why you have that question. So that's a good question. So for your situation, can I ask what your total debts were or are?
So they were lower because I had help from family.
Okay.
And I paid them off before I actually started working with you. And okay. I want to say they were $20,000 around. So it really wasn't terrible.
Okay. Yeah, that's very manageable. But if let's say you didn't have help or you didn't get a scholarship or anything, it sounds like they would have been around $50,000 or more.
I have two probably are like $75,000.
Okay. Okay. So, and those are colleagues and friends you know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so, and that's helpful. So the idea too is that, let's say someone else came on the show and she's a chiropractor and she didn't do the best job of understanding all her debt, and most people don't. They kind of just, they need to go to school, they take it, they don't always read the fine print, and all of a sudden she has $300,000 of debt. So that's a lot different conversation than yours, because if you have that amount of debt, throwing money at it, you're never going to, that's, you're already too deep. It's a terrible system. It's rigged, and you're never going to get out of that. So there's a different way to approach it. For yours, and someone even in $50,000 to $75,000, that's a very manageable amount if you get a job out of school paying $70,000 to $100,000 a year, and you have a reasonable means that you're living under. Mm-hmm. Then the way to do it is tackle that debt aggressively and get it paid as soon as possible, because it's very hard to balance both. If you have a rental place, if you're paying rent, if you have living expenses, if you have the debt you're trying to pay off, and then you're trying to invest, well, what could happen is you're already 26, 27, remember. So it's not like you're 22 out of school. So you're in a four or five years later stage of life, which means more likely you're going to be closer to the marriage and kids phase, if that's something you want. Obviously, if it's not, then that doesn't apply to you. But for a lot of people, it does. And that means you want to get that paid off before the marriage and kids come into effect, because then those have their own expenses. And then it's really hard to juggle kids, marriage, debt of student loans, and saving for retirement and investments. Very hard. So really managing that debt and aggressively paying off kind of gives you the freedom to then save and kind of live your life later, especially $50,000. You put in $500 a month, $1,000 a month, even if that's more than the minimum, you should have that paid off in 5-6 years. Considering if you're single, if you're not spending a lot of money, if you live somewhere that's cheaper and you're making $70,000 to $100,000, you should have at least $500 to $1,000 extra of income a month, probably more. And also, I'm going to ask you, what were your interest rates on that loan?
Honestly, I don't even remember. They weren't crazy. Cause I think I might've talked to you about this before we actually started investing.
Probably.
Like they weren't really atrocious, but okay. I don't remember the numbers exactly.
Yeah. So depending on what they are, if it was 2 or 3%, then maybe you don't have to pay it off as aggressively. But if they're 6 or 7 or 8, that's a similar market rate of return anyways. And I tell people, not just for financially, but usually for mental health and your like well-being, it's always good to be free of the debt. It always feels better. Like you can't really, I don't have to tell you that. So a lot of it is, if all else is equal, pay off the debt because you're going to feel better. You're going to feel free. You're going to feel like you could get on with your life. You paid it off. You're going to feel like you accomplished something. So yeah. I would tell people to aggressively pay off the debt, but come up with a plan. And so now I'm going to have to shamelessly plug me and what I do for people. So a lot of what I do and what I'm positioning myself to do in a business model is to work with people just like yourself who maybe have debt, maybe they make some money, but they don't necessarily need a financial advisor right now to invest their money a lot, but they do need a financial advisor or a financial person to help plan their budget, their cash flow, help manage the student loans and figure out what they should be putting away. And then, so I work with someone and maybe a subscription model based where we do $50 a month or something. And then I help gather all that and I give you a plan. And then, you know, okay, I'm going to put this here and this here and this here and this there. And then it's going to be paid off in this amount of time and I'm all set. And then when the time comes in 3, 4, 5 years down the road, we start working on the investments when the time comes, because there's a lot of people like you who didn't have, they don't teach you this in high school or college or before. And you're just like, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. And there's not a lot of resources out there for you to talk to because you don't have any money to invest. And most advisors, yeah. Right. So that's, I feel like it's a terrible cycle. So I'm trying to help those people who deserve help, who need help, and who worked hard and shouldn't feel like they're drowning in debt. So yeah, tackle it aggressively. Sorry to answer your question. Get it paid off as soon as possible. Have a plan, have a budget. You might have to skimp a little bit on expenses, because once you get out of that and you're debt-free, I'm sure you can agree it's probably one of the most freeing feelings you can have in life, right? So, that's a priceless feeling. And then we work together and we start investing your money and working on your retirement. And even if you're in your late 20s, early 30s, while that's later than someone else, it's really not, it's not crazy late, especially if you're being a veterinarian and you're making more than the average person. Very easy to catch up in a few years. So once again, but it's much harder if you're in your late 30s or 40s, you still have that debt and now you have kids and your budget is, it's a little less flexible is kind of what I'm saying. So hopefully that answers your question. Yeah. And that, and once again, congrats on paying off all that debt on your own. Good job. That's it's obviously, sounds like that's obviously been freeing feeling for you.
It's a very nice feeling to have.
Good. Congrats.
Okay, cool.
Question two.
Number two.
Yeah.
So this one, the rest of them are more kind of just like investing questions.
Yeah.
When you're like picking certain things to choose for, like, I guess my second and my third question kind of go together. Like, one, what does it mean to diversify your portfolio? And two, like, how do you decide like what you're going to put my money into? Huh. Like, what to choose? Specific things.
They do go together. And I'll address the first one first about what does a diversified portfolio mean? Because everyone's heard that, or they've heard that don't put all your eggs in one basket, or, you know, that cliche saying. And I'd like to first stress that while it's cliche and people might not like them, it's very true and it's very important to have a diversified portfolio. Now, what does that mean? It actually means two things. One of them you're probably familiar with, and most people are going to be familiar with. And the other one is going to be a little higher level thing that people aren't as familiar with, and they're not as good at doing themselves. And that's where my professional advice and expertise comes in effect for two. So I'll start with the first one. And the first one just means diversifying your assets in different companies and different in types of investments. So, right, don't put all your money in any one stock or any one fund, whether that's Apple or Amazon or Tesla, or we've heard Reddit being GameStop or AMC. Once again, I give the analogy of, imagine you're in an elevator and it's being held up by one cable, or it's being held up by 100 cables. You're gonna choose the 100 cables anytime, because if one of them fails, it's not catastrophic. And it's the same thing with your portfolio. Way too risky for people to not have a diversified portfolio, especially if they're younger and starting off, because most of the time your money is important to you. That, and if you lose your money, it's going to be bad. People aren't going to be happy, right? If you say, hey, if my investments go to zero, it's okay, I'm fine. Well, then I guess you don't have to take my advice. But for most people, they're not going to be happy losing all their money. And having it be even in a safe company, you know, people had Enron, there's been companies that have always been too big to fail over time that have. It's just what happens. So a diversified portfolio means not just getting it into different companies, but getting into different types of companies. So a large company is going to be different than a medium-sized company or a small company. And by that, I actually mean a large cap or small and mid cap. So a market cap just means you take the number of shares outstanding in the stock and you multiply it by what the stock price is worth. So for example, a small cap would be $2 billion valuation or below, a mid would be 2 to 10, and then a large would be 10 billion plus. And then you could go like mega large, which could be 100 billion more. And then there's micro cap, which would be like 500 million and less. So the reason why you want to have not just diversify between different companies, but actually different types of companies that are large, small, and mid and micro is they all perform differently. Sometimes in a bull market, the large will do better than the small, and sometimes in a bear, right? So it's different. So they actually move differently. They don't always move the same. And a lot of that has to do with correlation. And if you don't know what correlation means, it just means one action has a positive impact or direct impact on the other. So if all of your stocks have the same correlation, then you're not diversified. That means it's all going to move similarly and you're going to see these wild swings. You want to have a stock that has different correlations to the market, interest rates, large, small, growth, value, all this stuff. So one of them might be doing bad, but the other ones are doing good and vice versa. Therefore, you have a smoother portfolio and a smoother rate of return, and you don't have to have a roller coaster ride of investments. In addition to diversification, it's actually even broader. You also don't want to just have everything in large, mid, and small in one country, because then you're tied to that economy. I'm going to use the U.S. because we live in the U.S. and it's the largest economy, especially for the market. Then you're tied to one, not just one economy and one market, but also one currency, right? So if the U.S. currency falls, it's going to have a negative impact on the market compared to elsewhere. So it's also important to have a portion of your assets in other countries, large, small, and mid companies as well. It could be Europe, it could be Asia, it could be China, whatever you want. That's a topic for another time. But that's what diversified means. And to take it a step further, it's also not just being in the market. It's having a little bit of money in cash. It's having a little bit of money in bonds that are not as tied to the market, but are tied to interest rates, which tend to move in a little bit different directions. They're not as correlated. So therefore, if you have perfectly diversified stock portfolio in all different countries, in all different market caps, if the market's down, you're still going to be almost down with the market, not as much, but it's still not going to do well. If you have a portion in a real estate or something that goes in the opposite way of the market, then it's going to help prop up your portfolio when the global market is down, which happens very much. We live in a global age where things are very tied together. So that's really what diversified means. So you're properly in there. That's in the investment strategy. Now I'm going to get to the second thing that people don't understand. A diversified portfolio also means to not have all of your money in the same type of account. And by that, I mean a 401k or an IRA or an individual account or all in real estate or all in the bank. You want to diversify how your money is invested in different vehicles because they all have different tax consequences. They all have positive and negative. They all have different liquidity issues in terms of when you could get them out. So you might have a great diversified stock investment portfolio in your 401k, but if you don't have money anywhere else, then you're actually not diversified overall. Because this is what's going to happen. 401ks have rules and tax laws, and you're going to hit the age of 59 and a half when you can take it out. And if you need to get that money, you're going to have to pay taxes on all that money when you take it out. And what if you're still working as a vet and you own your practice and you're making $500,000 a year and you're in your 40% tax bracket? You're not going to want to take that money out because you're going to lose 40% of it. So you need to take your money out from somewhere else. And if you didn't diversify where other avenues to take money out, then you didn't diversify your portfolio properly in different types of investments. So people make that mistake a lot. They throw all their stuff in one investment tool and diversify it there and think they're set. and they forget the bigger picture thing. And that's really where my job comes in, to figure out the right tools for you to add money in the Roth IRA and the individual account and a little bit of real estate and some money in the bank for cash and right and on and on and on. And then you have a properly diversified portfolio in terms of taxes and liquidity and accessibility, and also in terms of investments and correlation. And there's more and more we could go on about that, but I'm going to keep it there for simplicity. Yeah. I'd love to talk to people more about that, especially if you do. But that's once again why, for you, we have a Roth IRA as well. You have a 401k at work, and we have an individual account. So if you need money, you have accessibility in different ways, and those are all diversified. That's what I recommend for everyone, and that's what I have myself, and most people do that as well. And this way, you'll see in the future, there's never an issue to get money out. We won't be like, huh, man, it's great I have $1 million, but I'm 45 years old and I can't get any of it. That doesn't do you any good if you have money and you can't get it, or if you get it and it has a huge tax consequence. That's not efficient. So that's kind of why it all goes together, and that's really why we're important, is those higher level things that just, you know, take a little bit more time and experience. But yeah, hopefully that answered your questions as well.
So the next one kind of also kind of feeds that. Explain like the difference between like a Roth, an individual, like the different accounts.
Yeah.
So I have an IRA and then I have a Roth IRA.
Yeah.
Like it's separate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I guess explain the difference
between that's them. A good question. So just so people know who are listening, a Roth and a traditional IRA work similar as a 401k. A 401k is like a regular IRA in terms of taxes, and a Roth 401k will have similar. So I'll just use Roth and regular so people know what the difference is. And then I'll use individual to be the third one. So let's first start with the difference between Roth and regular. And I'm going to go to just big higher level. There's going to be a few more differences. We're not going to get to everything. You could Google some of the stuff and get some more specific answers if you want. But the big difference is, think of it as now versus later. And that's tax benefits and accessibility. So a Roth IRA is a later thing. You're not getting any tax benefits now. What happens is, let's say you have $1,000 that you made in a month, and you put $100 in your Roth, you're still gonna get taxed on that full $1,000, okay? But that means you've paid your taxes on that now. So you put $100 in your Roth, you never put anything else in, and you take it out when you're 59 and a half, when you can, and it grows to $1,000. You get to take out that full $1,000, no taxes, no fees, nothing on that. It's all yours, no rules or anything on that, which is great. The $100 grew to $1,000. You got $900 of growth and income and dividends, and didn't have to pay taxes on any of that. That's pretty nice. And the reason why that's nice is, well, if you're 59 and a half, what if you're still working and you need to access money without paying taxes because you're in a higher tax bracket? That's nice to access that money later on and all that growth. In addition, you're younger. So there's a good chance if you wait 20, 30, 40 years, the growth in that is going to compound and be more exponential over a longer period of time. So the earlier you start it, the bigger the benefits will be for a Roth down the road. Also, the Roth doesn't have a rule about when you have to take money out, called the required minimum distribution, or an RMD. They just changed it. So for anyone listening, it's now 72. So when you turn 72, the government will force you to take money out of your regular IRA or 401k, whether you want to or not, which is not great, because no one wants to be forced to take money out if they don't need it. They want to have control over when they can take it out. The Roth, the money, the government already got their money. So it has more flexibility and it has more benefits the longer you hold it and the longer down the road in the future. But right now, currently, you're not going to see a lot from it. It's really a later thing. It's a longer term play. So you don't want all your money in the Roth because it's going to hurt the now. So then let's go to the difference. What's the regular one? So the regular one is the opposite. It's the now. You make $1,000, the same $1,000 in the month. But instead of putting in the Roth, you put $100 in your regular IRA or your 401k. The government will then tax you on $900. So you didn't get taxed on $100, which is nice. That could save you $20, $30, $40, depending on your tax bracket, right? That's a pretty big deal, and you're probably doing more than $1,000. However, that money still grows over time. You don't have to pay taxes on it while it's in the account, just like the Roth. But then you turn 59 and a half and you can start taking it out. Let's say that $100 grew to $1,000 again, and you take that $1,000 out, you're going to get taxed on $1,000 of income, even though you only got a tax benefit of $100 when it went in. So all of that growth and dividends and earnings eventually get taxed as regular income. So if you're retired or you're making less money and you're 59 and a half and you want to take the money out, not as big of a deal. But if you're a working adult who's making a higher income and you're in a 30% tax bracket, you have $1 million in your 401k. Well, you don't, because you owe 30% of taxes on that. So you really have 700,000 if you took it all out. So it becomes strategically take it out. It becomes a lot more complicated to handle. And then you turn 72 and the government will force you to take money out. And if you're still working, which a lot of people do, I mean, people are living longer. Some people love their jobs. They don't want to retire at 72. Who knows? Then the government will force you to take money out. And it's usually based on your age and your amount. So for example, if you have $1 million in your 401k, you might have to take out, or your IRA, sorry, you might have to take out $30,000 to $40,000 a year, every year. And that could be 30% to 40% taxes. You might not need it. It becomes a whole thing. And it's not as flexible, and it's not an efficient tool to withdraw money from. That's kind of the big thing. It's not an efficient tool. Furthermore, from an estate point of view, if you pass away and your spouse or any, if your spouse inherits it, they don't have to worry about this. But let's say someone else, your kids or a charitable organization inherits the money. They also have to pay taxes on it when they take the money out. So it's not as an efficient tool for estate and inheritance planning because of all the taxes that go with taking money out. The reason is you get a tax benefit now, which is great, but you're paying for it later. And the government wants their money, so there's no way around it. Except if you decided to not just quit your job and your income's less. I guess that helps a little bit, but you still pay some taxes. Also, we don't know what tax brackets will be in the future. So they could be higher now and lower in the future. Everyone thinks we're at all-time lows now for tax breaks, for tax brackets now, but who knows? It could stay the same or get lower. But if it gets higher in the future, then you're gonna have to pay even higher amount of taxes in the future. So it's a good idea to do both, to be honest, 401k and Roth, and hedge your bets and have both so you're flexible in the future. That's part of the diversified thing I say, because I have a lot of clients, they turn 59 and a half and they need to get money, and they don't have a proper investment vehicle to take it from that's not going to have taxes. So the third thing is just a regular investment account. It could be for you, it could be a joint one with you and your spouse, significant other, whatever. And those have a lot of differences. They don't have any tax breaks for the money to go in and out. However, there's no limits. You can put as much as you in and invest as much as you want, or as little as you want. The 401k and the Roth IRAs have limits. If you're under 50 and it's an IRA, you can do 6,000. If you're over 50, you can do an extra one. Same with the Roth. And then there's income limits that I'm not going to get into. And then the 401k, if you're under 50, it's 19,500. And if you're over 50, it's an additional, I think, 6,500 per year. They might have changed it, but those are about the numbers. For a lot of people, if you're making $200,000 or $300,000, putting in $25,000 a year isn't enough, right? You have money left over. So you've maxed that out and you need money to go somewhere else. One, because you've maxed out your vehicles, or two, you want to have accessibility in the near term, right? If you're 30 years old and you put all your money in a Roth or a regular IRA, what if you need your money in 5 or 10 years and it's hard to get it out? You need another avenue. So you put it in an individual account. There's no rules, there's no tax benefits. What happens is if you hold your investments for over a year and you don't sell anything after that, you'll have a long-term capital gain, and those get taxed much more favorably than a short-term capital gain. So a short-term capital gain, you buy something, you have GameStop, you bought it for $1,000 and now it's worth $50,000. It's not anymore, but let's say you sold it and you made $50,000. That's a $49,000 capital gain. And you did that probably in less than a year. You're now, that's gonna be treated all as income. So you're gonna owe 20 to 30% of taxes on that. And people don't understand that. So you invest differently in each one, right? you invest it, you have to manage it a little bit more actively in an individual account, because there's taxes, there's rules, there's all this stuff. It changes as your life changes, but it becomes very useful, because the alternative is, with all that extra money, is real estate or maybe life insurance or the bank. And while those are all helpful in some ways, you don't want to put all your money there. So it's a nice tool to have if you think you want to access this money in maybe 5 or 10 years, and you're, you know, in your 30s or 20s or 40s, if that makes sense. So most of the differences between those are how they're treated for tax purposes, the rules about taking money in and out, and what types of investments go in them. And that's why they all have to be structured a little bit differently. They have to be managed a little bit differently and monitored as well. Otherwise, I have clients, and there's nothing wrong with this, you know, they have $100,000 of capital gains in their investment account, which is great. They earned a lot of money, but selling it becomes a problem. How do you strategically sell it? So you wait for them to retire, so they're in a lower capital gains bracket. There's all these things that go into it. It's a whole strategy that if you're not doing this, you're going to end up paying thousands of dollars extra in taxes that you could have avoided if you either, you know, worked with a professional or if you had done some research on. And that's also part of my job, is just those higher level stuff to work with people on as well. But yeah, it's a good question, because all those things go together, like you said. They really do. You have to understand all of those rules and put all those pieces together, which makes it more complicated, right? The more variables you have in place, the harder it is to track and everything as well. But some of them are good problems, right? I have too much money. Ugh, right? What am I going to do with all the gains I have, right? They're good problems to have, but you still want to do it efficiently as well, because obviously nothing wrong with the government, but you want to keep more of the money to you than to the government, for obvious reasons. So hopefully that helps answer all those questions. They're great questions and all kind of related. That was four, right? So you still have one left?
That was four. Okay. And so I had one more left, but I feel like you kind of answered it.
Okay.
Was basically like explain to like, so someone my age who doesn't have a financial advisor who's using like the apps, like using to invest, like why would they find a financial advisor? Like point? And that's like, you kind of answered that.
That's
like, you need.
Yes, you need the advice. So I'll give you, first of all, even if you're younger, the average person has a major life event every 2 years, whether it's a wedding, a divorce, a death in the family, a inheritance, a changing jobs, moving, buying a house, having a kid. I could go on and on and on, right? And those are events you have. And when you have major life events like that, they usually affect you financially. And because of that, you need to evaluate your situation. So there's a lot more to just sitting on your toilet, which is literally what people are doing, opening up a Robinhood or Acorns app, pressing buttons and making money. That's just part of it, right? You also want to know, well, that Roth idea sounds pretty good, Ross. How should I open that? Or that Roth idea sounds pretty good, Ross. How much should I put in that? Or I just changed jobs and now they have these new benefits at work. What should I do? Or Ross, I just had a kid. Do I need life insurance? How much life insurance do we need to get? Or Ross, we just bought a house. What's going to happen? Or Ross, we're married. Do we need to combine finances with, right? And all, I could go on and on about all those. So there's a lot more issues. And so my job, once again, isn't to say, okay, now I'm going to take over management of your account and you're going to do exactly what I say and I'm going to charge you, you know, 1% fee and that's it. That's not what I'm trying to do. There's a lot of people out there who want to do that. And there's people who need that, but a lot of people don't need that. They need the advice. They need the guidance. They need someone to help them set up a cash flow statement. And they need them to be a financial life coach, because if I'm not there following up with you and we're doing this every year, it's going to fall through the cracks. And once again, you making money investing is great, but that's a small piece of the puzzle. There's a lot more to it. And that's why I discussed my subscription model, which is geared toward the advice driven, the financial life coach side of things where people need help with, where you could still do your investments on your own. I don't have to manage it. That's up to you. You might like it and have fun. Great. But you still need professional advice about how it fits in the bigger picture, taking advantage of the 401k, if that's managed correctly, what you should be putting in the Roth, if you need to diversify in real estate and cash, if your saving strategies are correct, if you're on track for retirement, if you need life insurance. Like, once again, I could go on and on and on, but those are all these issues. And once you add all those variables in, it's very hard for the average person to do it, right? I mean, it's just like you go to the doctor and, right, if your dog has an issue, or your cat or your pet has an issue, it's not a good idea to Google that and try to fix it yourself. It's not a good idea. I'm not saying that the amount of expertise to do that is the same as mine, but I do have advanced degrees. I do have a CFP. I have been doing this for a while, and I'm just going to say I do know more than you do about this, not just you, but the collective you. It's just how it is. Same with an auto mechanic. Same with a dentist. Same with a lot of that other stuff, a chiropractor. You should seek the professionals for this stuff. And even though, once again, it might cost more money, you're going to have better results, assuming you're working with the right person, right? Obviously, there's always bad doctors and bad mechanics and bad financial advisors. It's just how it is. But assuming you work with someone you trust and you like and is going to work out, then yes, there's going to be added value and there's help with a lot of other things in life, because all these things are complicated. It's not as simple as it seems, right? You can't just Google a sore throat and diagnose yourself. Who knows what happens? Same with cats and dogs and all that stuff. And it's a similar thing with that. So I always tell people, that's what I'm here for, to help you with the bigger stuff. Also, a lot of people feel more comfortable just that they have someone to support and hold them accountable, to set up the budget, to do a cash flow, to help them pay money and get out of debt, to make sure that there's someone who's kind of on them and holding them accountable. Because a lot of human nature is, if there's no one else there in your ear to help you, it falls through the cracks, or you don't do it yourself, right? And that's just human nature with a lot of stuff. There's the same reason why you hire a personal trainer to get in shape and don't just go to the gym by yourself, right? Maybe a few people can do that. Maybe 5 or 10% of people can, but 90% of people can't. They need that personal trainer. And it's really the same way with me for my stuff as well. And I think there's not a lot of people out there doing that similar stuff. And I think there's a lot of people like you and younger people who do need that advice and help and feel that they don't know who to go to, or that there's some barrier to entry because they don't have, $50,000 or $100,000 of investable assets. And I don't think you should have to put a bunch of money in and invest with someone in order to get the amount of professional advice that you need as well. Because we live in a day and age where we're responsible. The government's not going to take care of you for retirement. You have to do it yourself. And you need to seek help, and you need to create the wealth, and you have to work on it. Barring from winning the lottery or having a rich uncle die and giving you money, which isn't going to happen for most people, it's on you. It really is. And the earlier you start, the better off you'll be, and the more you'll learn, and the more comfortable you'll be, and on and on and on and on. So that's kind of my spiel, not just for me, but for my services and why I'm different, and also why our job is helpful and a lot more than just sitting on the toilet picking stocks. Anyone could actually do that, especially now when the market goes up and a blind monkey could throw a dartboard at a thing and pick something. So
yeah.
I actually realized I didn't answer your question about how I pick a diversified portfolio, but I work with the experts. I talk to JP Morgan and Fidelity and Schwab and all those companies, and they have CFAs and financial analysts to go through and I talk to them because it's a lot of information. And while I know a lot more than the average person, I'm not a professional stock picker. That's not my job. And so it's best to leave a lot of that to the professionals to do. They're managing the portfolio professionally. Of course, there's fees involved. It's always worth it for the most part if they're reputable and know what they're doing, because they're the best at it. There's a reason why they're doing it and I'm not and you're not. So I do that for the most part. And then I obviously have some clients who have their own. Ross, I want to be invested in green or socially responsible investing. Or Ross, I have some stocks that I want to pick, and that's always fine if we vet them. But for the most part, it's not Apple versus Google or Costco versus Walmart. That's not really the issue with a stock. It's large, small, middle. What should go in each one? U.S. versus international. Cash versus, that's the thing. Yeah. That's about 95% of your returns right there. People get too granular when they're picking and choosing stocks, and they don't realize just get in, get properly diversified, and let it ride, and it'll mostly speak for itself. I think the market's pretty efficient, and trying to outsmart it is a fool's errand. I'm sure people now you could talk to who say, you might talk to one person who made a bunch of money in Reddit, in GameStop, and 10 other people who lost all of it. And that's generally how the average investor feels. I'll finish on this last statistic, that over the lifespan of the S&P 500, which is just the largest 500 stocks in the index in the country, or the world, that it earns about 8.2% a year, and that might have changed in the last few years, but it's about 8 to 9% a year. The average investor investing on their own in the market earns about 2 or 3%.
Okay.
And it's for those reasons. They fear, they don't understand, there's a lot more that goes into it, and they probably should have used some advice. So once again, it's just a lot more complicated than they make it seem, and don't listen to your uncle or your neighbor who's giving you advice unless they're a professional, because if they were going to give you advice about fixing or helping your dog and they weren't a professional, why would you take that the same way as you're taking the investment stuff or fixing your car? So yeah, that's what I'm going to be. I'm very protective about this stuff and very passionate about what we do and helping people on a lot larger issues as well. And so, yeah, those were good questions. Thank you very much for asking that. I assume. Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully you learned a few things here about some of those differences. And yeah, those are some good technical questions. I know it's important for you and the audience to understand, especially young people, the differences. I really wish they taught you. I really wish everyone was required to take one semester of some type of investment, you know, portfolio management class, so they could understand some of these things. I guess my job wouldn't be as important if they did, but too many people come out of college with a lot of knowledge and information, and none of it is that useful. Like calculus 3 wasn't that useful, or organic chemistry is not as useful as financial literacy for the young. So I'm very passionate about that as well. So yeah, anyways, thank you very much, Kathleen. I hope you had a good time on the Money Seat today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And everyone, hope you enjoyed it. Another episode of the Money Seat. And thanks again, Kathleen, for being my guest today. And we'll see you on another episode. Thank you. Bye. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.